Lectionary Lab Live is recorded in the studios of the 405 Oxford Group, Gainesville, Florida, and Brasstown, North Carolina, a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Good to get up with you here. It's a Saturday morning. We don't often tape on a Saturday morning, but we've kind of had a busy week this week. I've been traveling. You've been traveling. Had a little Lectionary Lab appearance earlier this week. And between that and pastoral stuff, we're just running a little late, but it feels kind of nice talking the text here on Saturday morning.
Yeah, it does. I was over to Nashville and my old congregation, Holy Trinity, there, and did a preaching event, conversation about preaching with some local pastors there. And then I got back here and I had some people from coming in for a youth trip to the mountains and decided to spend the night in my little fellowship hall. So I was out on the side of a mountain digging weeds in a mission trip project yesterday.
There you go.
And they just got out of here and hit the road this morning. So it's been a busy week for both of them.
Good. And by the way, congratulations, while you were there at your former parish, they named you Pastor Emeritus as a way of honoring your contribution to that congregation.
Yeah, as if I didn't already feel old enough. But I really was appreciative, and it was good to see folks again and that sort of thing. And I told them, I said, I think it a great honor that they didn't wait till I was retired to make me a pastor.
There you go.
Made me feel like even more honored, but it was great to be back with them.
Well, very good. You deserve that. And the accolades begin to roll in. We've got texts to talk about today. These are the texts for the 11th Sunday after Pentecost, August the 4th, 2013. As we've done for the last several weeks, we're going to view things through the lens of the gospel today. And so our gospel text, Luke chapter 12, variously titled, I suppose, here, the rich man and the parable of the bigger barns, maybe the most famous line, eat, drink, and be merry. But as always, there's the parable, and then there's the wraparound story that's going on here. Let's talk a little bit. What are you thinking about in terms of preaching, and as we look at this gospel text, do we also take a look at the other readings for today?
You know, I think underneath this, there's three basic Lucan themes that he carries with him throughout his gospel, beginning with Mary's song, you know, the Magnificat, and about the wealthy and the poor and that sort of thing. These basic continuing things are, for Luke, riches are almost always bad. And there's a reason. We'll get to that in a minute. He also always has a theme of appropriate stewardship of resources, comes up over and over in Luke. Most importantly, coming up over and over in Luke is trusting God instead of trusting something or someone else. Those are three basic themes that we find in this short text, that for Luke, riches in themselves are not bad, but it's just so hard not to let them distract you. And I think that's the key word. It was the word from last week, is that the riches distract us from God and following God. That is a major kind of piece of this. And underneath this story is the issue of relationships. I think this is the human place we can really connect with this story. On the one, you've got this broken relationship it starts with the brother wanting Jesus to help him with his inheritance, you know, and it's probably the older brother who would get 2/3 and the younger brother get 1/3 in typical Judaic tradition. And the older brother holds the upper hand in the distribution. So it's hard to tell whether the younger brother is saying, get me more, or just get me mine.
Right.
But he's scratching at straws. I mean, and Jesus basically said, you know, this is a good setup for Luke, for Jesus to say, you know, this is not what I'm here about. And you and your brother have a problem, because you have a relate. He didn't say it that way, but underneath this is a relationship problem, that the money is getting in the way of the brothers.
Right.
And then you get into this whole gospel lesson in which the issue becomes that this man's relationship with who he is born to be, a child of God, his relationship with everything, is driven by his stuff. I think ending up with the text, ending up with the words about store up treasures for themselves but are not rich toward God, what Jesus is getting at is you're letting something get in the way of your relationship with God, and relationships with humans, with God, with institutions, all sorts of things are about trust. And trust is about risking that the other person in your life, the institution you've committed to, or God, will have your back. I think your question here is, can we trust God? You trust in your stuff, you're not trusting God. And that's where the thrust for Luke always is.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And it is, if you can step back and look at it, you see that it is primarily about this relationship. That's what Jesus really wants to talk about. Riches or wealth or things or stuff, these are the kinds of things that get in the way of relationships, and it's obviously happening to this set of brothers. Jesus is never one to miss an opening, and so Luke does set it up very, very well, and Jesus said, okay, look, first of all, I'm not here to be a judge between you guys, but let me just say this, and we've got this wonderful, then very quick story. Again, I want to echo what you said a few weeks ago. What a master storyteller Jesus is. Just a very few lines about the man building bigger barns, and I'm going to take my ease. And then very quickly and nimbly, Jesus says, well, this is the way it is with those who store up the treasures for themselves and aren't rich toward God. The relationship with God is interrupted. Besides that, you've got just the another level for preaching this text is the maybe a little simplistic, but still always fairly effective. If you knew this was your last day on earth, what would you spend your time doing? And every once in a while, that's a pretty good exercise to say, what am I doing with my time? Where am I investing my resources? With whom and for what am I living my life?
I had a parishioner some 20 years ago in Atlanta, worked for a major kind of corporation and moved around the country. And he came in one day and he told me he was leaving that job, selling the house they were in, moving further out of the perimeter, out of Atlanta, taking a different job than some things they were doing. And I looked at him and I said, what's motivating you? And he said, I just woke up the other night and realized nobody on their deathbed said, I wish I'd spent more time with my speedboat. And he said, I realized I had neglected relationships, and I wanted to spend the rest of my life, he was in his early 50s, the rest of my life focusing on the relationships.
Yep.
One of the couple of dangers I see here for us, particularly us mainline people, you know, Presbyterian, Lutheran, Methodist, etc., we go to the social justice thing right away so often that we need to be careful that we don't talk about resentment against the rich. Right now we got a political situation, not only in North Carolina, but in the country. It'd be easy to play that game. Right. That's not where this text is about. You need to not divide it and be about those rich people and us here. We need to da-da-da-da-da. That's one. A second caution here is we're rich people in this country, and we need, as far as the rest of the world, all of us are pretty rich.
Yeah.
But you have to be careful as you preach that. You have to make that clear so that people are not sitting there talking about the rich people. We need to recognize we are. But then we have to move from that to provide some grace note and some opportunity and inspiration for, how we deal with the fact that as the world is concerned, we're some of the richest people, and not letting our stuff and our need to take care of our stuff get in the way of both our relationship with God and our call to provide for the rest of the world. It's an interesting tightrope, because basically you can end up either making people resent the other people as the rich, or making people feel guilty for themselves, but without any opportunity to move, change that and move that in a new direction.
Yeah. It would be very possible to read this scripture passage and hear this parable today and the wraparound story with it and say, oh, good, I'm not either of those guys.
Yeah.
I'm not whining about that, and so I'm good, and I'm not the guy pompously assuming that everything's going to be great for the rest of my life. So I'm good. I made it to church today and got out, and the preacher didn't get me. You're right. We all sit there. Well, speaking of the preacher, let's go back to Ecclesiastes now.
Yep,
I love
yep.
Koheleth. I love the preacher, the teacher. We have the opening of this ancient book of wisdom, and it opens talking about the way we labor, the things we labor for, what can we really hold on to in life. And the preacher starts out with vanity. It's all vanity. What do we see here in Ecclesiastes?
Well, you know, this is an interesting kind. This is a depressing take on laboring your whole life for your possessions. He ties in with God in the middle, with the gospelism, God in the middle of the night to the rich guy saying, "You thought this was a good thing? You know,
yep.
You died, you got nothing left." In this vision of it, you know, you can labor your whole life. And this is the vanity thing, is saying, if only for this life only, as Paul would have put it, we had hoped, we are of all people most to be pitied. I think that ties together here. What the preacher is saying is, earthly life is difficult. And if the only hope we have within it is accumulating our stuff and working hard and doing all that, we've missed the boat. It'll just be not good. And I think that's a real tie-in. If you're driven, your sermon's going to be gospel-driven in that sense. This is a real tie-in to the God coming in the middle of the night to the rich man saying, this was vanity. It was vanity in terms of vain. It wasn't going to work.
Right.
It was an effort made uselessly. Now, there is no grace note in the Ecclesiastes text.
That brings up a really good point. As always, we want to be really careful about any particular verse or passage lifted out
right.
of its context. And
yep.
with a wisdom book like Ecclesiastes, that's particularly true. You really have to understand the balance of the book.
Right.
And the teacher here is doing a great job of setting up the fact that he has looked everywhere under the sun. He's tried it all and just happens to start out with labor here and accumulation, which ties nicely. He's going to have more to say later, but you certainly can't think that this passage represents all of the views of the teacher, or that everything
right.
that's going to be said in the book of Ecclesiastes is said in this passage. So just an important thing to remember.
The part I like about Ecclesiastes is that it reminds us once again, there is nothing new under the sun. There's
right.
new technology, but the human experience has been pretty much the same for the last 2,000-3,000 years or more in terms of making your way through life and what really matters and what really means something. And this text in Ecclesiastes is a person who is really philosophizing on a deep level about almost is a precursor to the existentialist. You know,
yeah.
what is life about? And if this is it, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard. But there is something more.
Yeah. Well, on the blog this week, I compared Koheleth to Stephen Wright in terms of his delivery and his, you know, sort of. Maybe I should, we could pull a little Barbara Mandrell here. He was existential before existential was cool. Let's take a look at the psalm text associated here. Psalm 49 matches the theme pretty well, I would say.
Oh, really well, really well. I mean, you've got, just beginning with verse 1, you of high degree and low, rich and poor together. This beats that Lucan theme of the leveling. And you move along down through it, and you begin to talk about the wickedness of those who put their trust in their goods and boast of their great riches. We can never ransom ourselves or deliver to God the price of our life. This ties very much into what I believe is the underlying theme of Luke's gospel and of this text in particular, is those things that pull us away from trust in God, and getting rid of those things so that we can fall fully into God's arms, if you will, if we can begin to fully trust. And anything that can pull us away is a thing that is a bad thing. And richness is one of those things today, but it's not the only thing. And that's an important piece to understand. The whole theme keeps running through, but God will ransom my life. He will snatch me from the grasp of death. That's 15. Do not be envious when some become rich or when the grandeur of their house increases, for they will carry nothing away at their death, nor will the grandeur follow them. So 49 is just a beautiful complimentary text to bring things from into a sermon about the rich man.
And I have to just, I can't get away without acknowledging, I just love this verse 10. When we look at the wise, they die. Fool and dolt perish together and leave their wealth to others. What a beautiful turn of phrase. A great turn of phrase.
The dull and stupid, they perish, is what the Book of Common Prayer does. I like yours better. What text is that?
That's the NRSV, the fool and dolt perish together.
Together.
Yeah. Colossians chapter 3, one of my absolute favorite passages in the New Testament. Part of me just, this is one of those passages where I think we just need to read it and let it wash over us. We need to just steep in it a bit.
Yes.
Not that it shouldn't be and can't be preached and taught, but I love the language here in Colossians 3. What would you like to say about the preaching considerations?
Well, you know, again, I'm admitting today more than most, I'm really driven with this gospel text and then the things that come back and complement it. And this first bit in Colossians really ties with the way what I've been talking about in terms of relationships and the things that get in the way and the things that keep us from God. Seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God, being rich toward God. Set your minds on things that are above, not things that are on earth, etc. And I think it really ties together of saying, where is your heart?
Yeah.
Where are you going? Where is your relationship? You know, that where your heart is, there where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The Luke and Paul line, you can just go through over and over. He's got this dialectic, this dualism, and you got to, and as Bob Dylan said, you got to serve somebody, and from his old gospel album. And I think Luke is really saying, mammon, money, riches, these things, evil is that they, if they draw us away from God.
Right. Well, and to me, Paul works out here in Colossians just the vivid detail of course, he's working with a flesh-spirit kind of thing, look above, here on the earth kind of thing. And so if we are raised with Christ and our vision is raised, these are the kinds of things that we will think about. But if we're focused on life and the places that the flesh will lead us, look here, folks, here's the sorts of things that will come. It's another one of those lists that none of us escapes.
Exactly.
And one of the passing references I might make in the sermon based on the gospel is, as we look at Paul writing here, it may be easy for me to say, well, I'm not a rich man. I'm not, you know, you know, I'm not building bigger barns. Okay, so I'm good. Well, just take a look through this list. Anger, wrath, malice, slander, abusive language from your mouth. I mean, you know, he sort of runs down this list.
That would have been last week for me. Sorry.
Yeah, well, there you go. And so we all kind of go, oh, yeah, I didn't make it after all, did I? So just a reminder, but we all are sinners in need of the grace of God.
Well, one of the lines in there that ties in very closely is the word greed, and parentheses, which is idolatry. And playing with that a little bit, notice it says greed, not riches. You don't have to be rich to be greedy.
That's correct, and not all rich people are greedy.
No, many of them are generous.
That's it.
And the idolatry is the key issue. I like that piece because idolatry has to do with, where do you put your trust? If I may quote Dr. Luther a little bit, paraphrase anyway, in his small catechism on the Ten Commandments, and thou shalt have no other gods before you, he said, your God is that which you serve and put your trust in. And it doesn't have to self-identify as a God. You know, it can be your career, your status, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That is idolatry. That's the nature of idolatry. And you come back to this greed, seeking other things, filling this need hole because you have no trust. And, you know, as Augustine said, there's a hole in the heart of humanity that only God can fill. And greed, what the rich man did there, I would call him the greedy man. Mm-hmm. He was trying to fill a safety in the world, feel good about himself, be safe, whole, that really can only be filled by God.
Yeah.
And that's the key issue there. And that's why those few words, greed, which is idolatry, is, I think, is a beautiful place to start a sermon on this, on these texts for today.
Good idea. Well, we've got a couple of minutes left here. Let's be sure we touch Hosea and the accompanying psalm text for those that are following the semi-continuous track. Hosea, another prophet with great words, strong words, and today's reading in Hosea strikes me as a little, it's not what you expect from a fire-breathing Old Testament prophet, exactly. Different kind of message today from Hosea.
Yeah. When Israel was a child, I loved him. Mm-hmm. Out of Egypt, I called my son. It's more of a gentle city. You know who I hear? I hear the prodigal son's father sitting on the porch, looking down to the mailbox. I've always had this image, you know, that when the prodigal came back, his father ran to meet him. Well, he had to be looking for it.
That's it.
And I just see him in my southern kind of country farm image of sitting on the porch, straining his eyes, and while he's doing that, he's just thinking about it.
Yeah, thinking about
and
it.
And this is what I hear. I loved him. I cared about him, and he's wandered off. But if he'll come back, I'll love him. I'll care about him. I think that's the more that grace in the Hebrew Scriptures kind of stuff.
Right.
Is what I hear here.
I see here God looking at his now adolescent, fully adolescent children. This is a teenager. The more I called them, the more they went away from me. And you're right. And he's reflecting here. I've loved them. I've reared them. I've walked with them. And this is the setup where many times with a Hebrew prophet, we're going, okay, now give us the vengeance. Where's the, you know, where's Sodom and Gomorrah? Where's, and so I'm going to blast them out of the, you know, out of the land until they come back and acknowledge me. And yet we get in verse 8, how can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over? I am going to execute my anger, but it's not going to be against you. It's going to be against that which has drawn you away, and they're going to come home to me.
Yeah.
They're going to have gone through an experience. The passage closes, they'll come trembling like birds, like doves from the land. I will return them to their homes. They're going to have been through perhaps a difficult, even traumatic experience, but they're going to have a place to come. They're going to come home. I am looking out for my people.
Well, you know, it's nowhere in the text, really, but tying back with the gospel lesson and the prodigal son, you start with, help me divide my inheritance.
Yeah.
What if this guy's the guy who goes home and just demands it, you know? And you get this play of these images of stuff. But what's really fascinating here is, again, with that, they'll come home trembling. And that's where that image of the prodigal son comes to me. They'll come home trembling, and I will return them to their home. And the compassion that we see in Jesus' story of the prodigal son is all over the place in these Hebrew scriptures, in which this whole business, they've run away from, just like the prodigal son kind of thing, went after something else and then discovered that it wasn't all that and needed to come home. That's that image of they'll come home trembling from the west. They'll come trembling like birds. And yeah. God will receive them home.
God will receive them.
And it ties into that whole business of what the problem with riches, the problem with greed, is not in themselves. The problem is if they draw us away from that relationship with God and we try to fill this important place in our lives with something that's not God.
Which Psalm 107 does a really nice job of topping us off for today. It reminds us that it is God who satisfies the thirsty. It is God who fills the hungry with good things. And strikes me that Psalm 107, if you were particularly working with the Hosea text and using this, really is an excellent support for the Hosea text. We almost get a view here of the other side of the coin. What is it like to be the prodigal out wandering? What is it to be the one who finds themselves far from God, wandering in desert wastes, finding no way in the town, hungry, thirsty, our souls are fainting. Is this a description of the wanderers while we're out and about?
Yep. I haven't much to add to that. It's just a beautiful psalm in terms of the whole putting their feet on a straight path. Give thanks to the Lord for his mercy, what he does for his children. It's one of those tender, compassionate, they wandered off, I received them home kind of images that are important in this whole context. Because overall today, all of the texts have to do with people leaving, trying to substitute something else, wandering around, looking for something else to fill their lives, and God receiving them home. This reminds me of a line from a favorite Lutheran hymn. It's called "I Was There to Hear Your Boring Cry." We use it a lot for infant baptisms and funerals, as a matter of fact. There's this great line. It's the first line. "I was there to hear your boring cry. I'll be there when you are old. I rejoiced the day you were baptized to see your life unfold. I was there when you were but a child with a faith to suit you well. In a blaze of light, you wandered off to find where demons dwell. When you heard the wonder of the word, I was there to cheer you on. You were raised to praise the living Lord to whom you now belong," etc. And I love the fact this hymn includes the fact that part of the spiritual experience for so many people is wandering off to find where demons dwell. And the voice, the "I was there," the voice in this hymn is God saying, "I've been there throughout your life." And it ends with, "I'll be there after your death," with just one more surprise, resurrection. And it goes from birth to death in this hymn. "And I've always been there with you," including God is with us as we wander off to see where demons dwell.
And that is, I maintain, the promise of the gospel. God is with us. In whatever form, in whatever situation you want to take, there was an excellent question raised this week. And by the way, let me give this super quick commercial for our new Lectionary Lab Facebook page. If there are some of you who haven't been there yet, many, many of you have, and I want to appreciate that. That is a much easier place to post input and feedback, and that's one of the reasons we've established it. And I would just almost beg people to take a minute and offer some feedback and to get it from one another. But Father Jason Emerson this last week, in dealing with the parable about prayer and ask and seek and knock, saying, how do we sit with that text in the midst of people who have very faithfully asked God for things that have not come to pass in their lives, whether it was the birth of a child or the healing of a disease or whatever it might be? How do we sit with them? And my reflection on that was, the real promise that lies behind the gospel is, I will be with you. If you are going to remain childless, I will be with you. If your loved one is not going to be healed in this lifetime, I will be with you. And looking in my own life and in the lives of the countless parishioners I've been privileged to sit with over the years, that ultimately is the power of the gospel. God is with us in those circumstances. So I think that's an outstanding hymn text to remind us that when it's all said and done, what the gospel of Jesus Christ is about is God is with us. God never forgets about us. God, like Ephraim and Israel, is waiting to bring us home.
That's right. There you go.
Amen. Man, let's pass the plate and have an invitation.
Y'all come. Well, actually... In the Episcopal Church, we invite people back to the parish hall for further discussion.
Oh, okay. Anyway. Well, it's been good again, my friend. Thanks right. for taking the extra time and bending with the schedule a little bit. Those of you listening, let us hear from you. Come to lectionarylab.com. Come to our Facebook, The Lectionary Lab. You can just search that there, and there's actually a link from the website. All right, Bubba, I don't reckon there's much else for us to do but to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Mama Told Me by Frank Anea. We go out this session with Morning Cry, written and composed by John Ildesacker, performed by Jackie Dara.
I was there when you were but a child.